When they were just teenagers, they had the chance to perform on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. The piece was a tarantella by Camille Saint-Saëns. That very piece appears on a new recording. It's called Winged Creatures. It's a new recording with clarinetist Anthony McGill and his brother Damare McGill. He's a flutist. And they've reunited with the very first orchestra with whom they had ever performed. It's all happening on their new recording, which is this week's feature on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. Anthony, you've just released a new recording with your brother, flutist Damare. How many recordings have the two of you done together now?
This is our second recording, actually, via Sadie Records, actually, out of Chicago. And our first one was a trio album that was released 2 years ago, I believe, and with flute, clarinet, and piano. And this is our first flute, clarinet, and orchestra album.
You grew up in Chicago, and you've returned to your roots a little bit by collaborating with the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra. Why did you want to work with this orchestra?
Well, my brother and I actually both played in the orchestra when we were teenagers, and it was my first orchestra, I think probably his first orchestra. And I was 12 years old, and he was a little, 4 years older. So he was an elder statesman in the orchestra, so to speak, when I first joined. And we got to travel the world with this orchestra, and it was my first taste of what it was like to play in a pro orchestra. So this orchestra is made up of high school students, but as you'll hear in the recording, they are exceptional. And so it was kind of a no-brainer when someone suggested we record this with them, because it's a very unique idea to do a professional recording with the youth orchestra. But as you'll hear, the result is pretty awesome. And it's just great to be able to go back with, the students that were the same age as my brother and I when we were there.
What's kind of cool, too, is this is an orchestra that's not only investing in the future of music and the next generation of musical leaders, but their music director, Alan Tinkham, is also a tremendous advocate for new works, and there are a couple of world premieres on this recording.
There are, and that's especially wonderful, actually, today to be able to play new music with a youth orchestra, with a label that also supports new music, Sadie Records, and a conductor that supports it as well, is just amazing.
Well, one of those works was commissioned back in 2012 for you and Damare, and it was commissioned by this orchestra, is that right?
That is correct. Joel Puckett's Concerto Duo.
And so what's cool about this is it's all about family and childhood and that affection and the joy of sibling camaraderie. I guess there was never any sibling rivalry, is that right?
Well, as I always mentioned, the rivalry was finished. My brother won because, he was so gifted when we were growing up that there was no rivalry. I just had to look and watch as he won competition after competition, and I just learned how to practice really hard by watching him. So, no, it's a great coming together. And in this piece in particular, I think Joel does a fantastic job of presenting all these different colors of nostalgia and family and lullabies and songs and sweetness and this sense of familial love and just this cherished kind of sound that he has throughout this piece is really great.
I also thought one of the very touching things was Joel dedicated it to you not just as remarkable musicians, but as remarkable humans. How did that make you feel?
Well, when you get to work with composers that are alive, part of the excitement and the beauty of that is that you generally, if they're writing a piece for you, you generally get along with them, and you generally get to know them. Even if you're not in their room, their studio, working with them all the time, right? There's something about spending the time working on the piece, them spending the time creating the piece, and then giving it your all emotionally. And when that all works out, you feel so lucky to be able to bring their work to an audience and to kind of recreate the sounds that came from their heads, their brains. And these great composers that are on this album are special people. And I think that I'm just very thankful that we get to play it, that, you know, they basically chose us, or we chose them, or they chose us. It all kind of happened wonderfully. But it is a great honor for him to say so, to say that. But the music making, the music creation, we're lucky enough to be able to play their works. So we're the lucky ones.
Let's talk about the movements in Joel Puckett's piece. Each one is actually named for a little toddler that he knows. And I love the first movement. It's so fun. And he does such a great job creating this image of a large wooden roller coaster known as the Scream Machine, the Great American Scream Machine.
Yeah, the Great American Scream Machine. The name says it all. And as soon as the piece starts, you feel this energy. You know that moment before you, if you've ever been on a roller coaster where you're at the very top of it, you don't know what's going to happen, but you just hope this thing doesn't break, especially the wooden ones. And then you feel the vibration of the thing, the natural vibration of all of everything working together as you careen down this steep thing, and your face is pulled back and all of this stuff. And you have the sounds of that, the actual device, metal on metal / wood. And then you have the screams of your fellow companions on this roller coaster. And he does that in the piece really well, because you have he has the loud percussion banging, he has the screams of the clarinet and flute going really high, like repeatedly later, as the orchestra comes crashing in, and so you hear all of that right away, and then you're on a journey, because then after that initial drop, you know, it takes you. Sometimes there are loops and spins and curves that where you spin around and you can feel the force, you know, pushing you against the side and next to your partner on the roller coaster. So you have the flute and the clarinet doing that as well. So sometimes I'm screaming, sometimes the flute is screaming, sometimes the whole orchestra is screaming, and we're crashing into each other a little bit. So no one gets hurt in this one, though, and that's really wonderful. You might get a little whiplash listening to it, but that's about it.
Well, the second movement, Mama Doe's Song for Joel, is a complete 180. You're lulling a baby to sleep, and you each get the opportunity to do that, clarinet and flute, but it's not always as easy as you might think to lull that baby to sleep.
Right. This one is a very special one. So if I remember correctly, Mama Doe is Joel's grandmother, and she used to sing this to him as a baby. And of course, he tried to pass it on. And It is wonderful. As we know, that doesn't always go so well after, as you mentioned. But the simple melody itself is stunning and impactful. And the use of both of these instruments to kind of lull a baby to sleep is so masterful.
And the orchestra, at least half of the orchestra, also gets a chance to sing a little bit, right?
This is the most stunning part of the piece. It was stunning in the performances of it years ago. It was the stunning in performance of it, last year when we just did it recording, and in the recording session, because it's such a texture that is such a surprise that you almost don't know it's there, and it's so subtle that it adds this gorgeous glow to what is already a really stunning melody. To hear, especially the youth orchestra voices humming this, is especially effective, I think.
And the final movement is For Audrey, and that's a very special connection to the Chicago Symphony Youth Orchestra.
It is really, really wonderful. It is, this movement just ties it all together. And I think I can imagine who this woman was, because we had so many people in Chicago who helped raise us, in addition to our own mom. and we had lots of other people in Chicago that were like our second and third and fourth moms, some with the Youth Symphony and some with the music programs we were at in Chicago. And so these people in these organizations are the reason why we're here today performing this piece for you.
The work that opens this recording is the title track, and it is a world premiere, Winged Creatures by Michael Abels. And I got a real kick out of reading about him as a composer, discovering that he's also writing film music for horror films.
Yeah, Michael Abels is a real genius. I think it's really awesome to play his music now, because whether he remembers it or not, I think we reminded him, my parents reminded us, because it was so many years ago. He wrote a piece for my brother and I in Chicago all those years ago when we were teenagers called Sibling Rivalry. And anyway, he's been writing for so many years, and he had a couple of these, he's had a couple of these big blockbusters recently. And you're right, he's such a creative composer, characteristically, that I think it's amazing that his name is being attached to these movies, Get Out and Us, and all of these new things that projects that he's going to be doing now. It's pretty stunning that we got to work with him in the midst of all of this great Hollywood stuff that he's been doing. He writes this piece for my brother and I and youth orchestra, and it just shows like his dedication to the craft, that he took the time to do this, to be honest, and he's a great, kind, gentle person as well, and we were very lucky that he did this, and I thank him for it.
Well, this is truly an inviting work. I just couldn't stop listening to it. It reminded me of literally watching a butterfly. That's what it's intended to be, is kind of following a butterfly and the way that it sort of just flits from flower to flower and you don't really know what it's going to do. And I just thought he did that so effectively. I'm curious what your reaction was when you first saw those notes on the page.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's so, so effective how he writes. He does a really great job of having like this sense of freedom and this sense of moving around and flying from flower to flower, as you mentioned, and flying throughout the world even. And the music just travels in this way. And yet the music also travels up and down the instruments extremely, with lots of virtuosity, and yet it's so enjoyable, as difficult and challenging as the music is. It's so enjoyable to be able to fly around and do that, you know, on the stage. And harmonically, I think he does a really good job of playing with the different voices and playing with the different balances of with the orchestra, with the instruments against the orchestra or with the orchestra. And it's so colorful, and the way he uses the instruments with the texture of the sounds that we produce, the sounds that the orchestra produces, gives it the spectrum of expression and color, like a prism.
So this piece is called Winged Creatures. Are there other connections to that title, or is it referring more to what you're able to do with your instruments?
That's a very good question. I think that my interpretation of it is that there are other subtle relationships there at play. And I just think about my brother and my relationship to our growth as musicians in Chicago, and kind of like, I guess you could imagine like a butterfly coming from this small home on the Chicago South Side, and then, you know, kind of flying downtown toward the north side of Chicago, which is a very different world than where we grew up. And then from that experience with the youth orchestra that's playing on this album, you know, flying to both coasts of the U.S., playing principal instruments in our orchestras, the Seattle and New York orchestras, respectively, is kind of an image that is of growth and expansion, and the use of the imagination that it took to get us there, and our parent support and everyone else in Chicago. I mean, I think that's why I'm so excited about this album in particular, is that it brings all these things together. I'm not sure that Michael thought about all those things when he came up with the title, but maybe. I'd like to think so.
The Tarantella by Camille Saint-Saëns is a work that you and Demare have had in your back pocket for many years.
Yeah, true.
Tell me about when you played it on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah, we did play this piece on Mr. Rogers. And I think I was probably like 13 or 14, and my brother was 4 years older than that. And he was already at the Curtis Institute of Music. And one of his friends was a pianist and organist there, Alan Morrison. Alan knew Fred Rogers from Pittsburgh, and who was also a pianist and organist. And he invited us to come on the show. So it was amazing. You know, we had to do a little bit of acting, talking about why we were wearing tuxedos to perform. And I guess we had a fake concert coming up that we were rehearsing. And so Fred came by the neighborhood and talked with us about what we were doing and why we were dressed up like that. And then we played this piece. And then we talked a little bit about our instruments and why we liked playing them. And it was awesome. I was like 14 years old, and I'm on the show that only the likes of, you know, Yo-Yo Ma and some of people like that, Itzhak and all these people, go on these type of shows on public TV and talk to the world about music making. So to do it as a kid and be able to get that opportunity was like so wild. and it was a lot of fun.
I was curious, are you guys still wearing tuxedos on stage? I know that there's a lot of change in the concert attire.
Well, with the orchestra, we still wear white tie and tails, actually. And In the opera orchestra, we did wear black tie, but there is talk. I think there's a fashion committee now that is in discussions to see if we should continue that or not. But when we play with, you know, orchestra, my brother and I solo in front of orchestras, we wear whatever we want. We try to usually just, you know, suits and stuff like that. No, not quite velvet jackets, but close.
In addition to your career as a performer, both as a soloist and as the principal clarinetist with the New York Philharmonic, you also serve on the faculty of the Juilliard School, the Curtis Institute of Music, and Bard College's Conservatory of Music. And I know that oftentimes teachers learn just as much as their students. And I'm wondering what you have learned from the musicians with whom you are working in these institutions.
Oh, yes. I learn so much in every single lesson I teach, because the things that I'm talking to my students about, I need to think about. I need to process. I need to improve always. So as musicians, we don't get to a point where, okay, we have everything figured out. That's it. So talking with my students about those things that they're working on, they really need to work on, I'm talking to myself, basically. So I'm constantly getting inspired by the music that they're playing. So if we're working on the Brahms clarinet sonata and I get to hear them play it with piano, like, first of all, I'm discovering new things about that work that maybe I never thought of. I'm saying things that I've never said before about their performance of it. So I'm giving myself new ideas about how to perform it the next time I do it. And so it's kind of a process that we make music together. We improve our own playing together, of course, mainly through my voice in the lesson, talking to them, but really by me listening to them. And so getting better as a musician is about listening. And so the more you listen to music, the more you listen to your students or to other performers, the more you become a better musician.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.